Thank you, everyone. Very, very, very good. So glad you're all here this morning. And I think that the Lord has some very wonderful things in store for us today. Just already in our opening singing and praising of His name, there's a sense of His presence. And there's reason for that. There's desire that the Lord has for that so that we can receive from Him His kingdom in every way. Now, I'm going to start out today by going on with the second installment, as it were, of the appearances of Jesus with the resurrection, how He appeared after He rose from the dead. And today we're going to look at how He appeared to 500 all at once, which Larry read just a minute ago. But I want to start out with the story. I may have shared it with you before. I can't remember. I am getting a little older. Possibly you don't remember it either, so here it is. Back in Arizona, I was getting started with planting a church, and I thought, this is great. So I put on the t-shirt and shorts, my usual clerical attire at the time, and went to the coffee shop, had my Apple laptop, put it on the table, opened it up. There I am, wanting to meet non-Christians. I think this is it. This is how you do it. You don't look like a pastor. You have a laptop. You sit in a coffee shop, and you see what happens. And somebody approaches me and says, "Hey, you look like a pastor." Yeah, absolutely. And then he says, "I'm a pastor too." And I felt like saying, "No, get away from me. I got to meet non-Christians," right? And, you know, he had a t-shirt and all, a laptop. Wonderful guy. I got to know him a little bit, and he moved on to Long Island. And I'm still in touch with him. We're reading the same books and so forth. Getting into the same trouble, but that's a different topic some other time. So I thought about that quite a bit. I still do. And I'm thinking, well, okay. In that coffee shop, which was maybe the same square footage as this room here, on any given day, at any given time, and not so much in the evening, but during the day, in three of the four corners, there would be a church group doing its work. Different groups of different kinds from different churches. And I would go there to meet pastors, is what I did. Didn't meet any non-Christians to speak of in that place. And I'm thinking, wow, okay. In fact, much like around here, maybe a little more in Arizona, all the public schools had a waiting list for church plants to rent their space. You probably found that here at St. Francis in the days in Randolph School. So I'm thinking some more. I'm thinking, well, okay, what's going on? And then one of the people in our church plant told me, you know, I used to go to this large church I visited, and it was a huge mega church, you know, 10, 15,000, something like that, a weekend. So I would go there. I went only a short time, and they invited me into the group that was for us, young families or, you know, whatever it was. And she said, I went twice, and both times I got the impression the reason they wanted me to come was to keep the group going. Right there. Conviction. I mean, oftentimes that's what we do. We want them to come so we can keep going. Not all the time, of course, you know. We're getting very spiritual and mature, but that's there. That's a temptation for us to think. And I was thinking about that more, and I thought, well, what we've done, at least what I have done, is I have wanted to develop a program for my church that people will just like and keep coming to, so that we can keep that program going, so that people will like it and keep coming to it. And what was missing, by the way, I want you to know, There's nothing wrong with that. It's not immoral. It's not evil. It's not against God. God loves people who go to church programs. He loves the whole thing. But as I look at it, it strikes me what was missing was the witness to the resurrection. I wanted people to know how good our program was or what we were planning so that they would be attracted into it and stay. Whether they caught the power of the resurrection did not cross my mind at the same time. Now, you are probably a little further along than I am, and it probably does cross your mind at the same time. However, it's hard to do both at the same time. So, I'm looking at that. I'm looking at the scriptures for today, and I'm seeing that Jesus appeared after the resurrection to 500 all at once, and I'm thinking, oh, there's something in that. And what's in that that I want to look at with you today is this. There is a life-giving invitation, a powerful and specific challenge that comes, and then a commission to bear fruit. The way that we know we're witnesses of the resurrection is that we bear fruit that glorifies God. So I want to unpack that a little bit with you. And if you take a look, just for reference here, from the reading from Corinthians today, about the middle or so of the paragraph, it says, "Then he appeared to more than 500 brothers at one time, most of whom are still alive, though some have fallen asleep." So what's going on here when Paul's writing this? It's a few years down the road since his call to be an apostle, since the resurrection of Jesus. And the Christian faith, by this point, by the time they're sitting down to write these things, the church is losing a little steam. It's been hitting some hard spots. People are spreading out into some very isolated places. Things are slowing down just a little bit. In fact, there's quite a number of scholars who would believe that Luke wrote the book of Acts because the Christian communities just around that part of the world were beginning to just peter out a little bit. So what they did was, let's remind each other of what it was like at the beginning. Let's go back to the root. Let's go back to what was going on in the beginning. And that's when Paul's writing here in 1 Corinthians, and this chapter in particular, going back to the power of the resurrection. And he starts listing all the places that he comes to his mind anyway, of to whom Jesus appeared after he rose from the dead. And of course, there's Peter and others, and there's the women that we know of from our recent Easter times. And then there's these 500 at one time. And when Paul is writing this letter out, and it's being received in Corinth and being read in the public worship of those house churches around that city, a good number of those 500 were still alive. And they had seen him risen from the dead with their own eyes. Now, what's the powerful, life-giving invitation? Well, I think it's this. There's probably others in this that you can come up with as you think about this passage, but I think it's this. At least this is one. Would you and I be willing to ask God to reveal the power of the resurrected Jesus to an entire group all at one time? How about this entire county at one time? Or the people who live on your road all at one time? Or a school? Or a class that you attend? Or a group that you're with? Or an extended family? Or whatever group it might be, would we be willing to ask God to let some power come upon that group all at once. I think that'd be one of the greatest things in the world myself. You see what I mean? What would happen if everybody on your road all at once had this revelation of the risen Jesus and they started moving into the new life that came from that? What if everybody in your extended family called you up one day and said, you know, I had the strangest dream that Jesus was risen from the dead and there he was talking to me or whatever. And every one of those people called you up and said the same thing. That would just be incredible. That would be wonderful. There's a life-giving dynamic in that Jesus would release. And that's what happened here. 500 all at once. Bam. Or however it happened. I have no idea. There it is. What happens if your entire prayer list, however long or short it might be at this point today, of people that you want to see come to know Jesus, what if that entire prayer list all at once had a revelation of the resurrection of Jesus? For one thing, you'd get to put together a new prayer list. It'd be great. You get out of that rut, you know, whatever it is. So, well, that's the life-giving invitation. And that's not to say any of those groups that come to your mind are bad or immoral or evil or need to be corrected or straightened out any more than you or I need it. It means that the life of God that is flowing through the risen Christ is flowing into them. And that's what we want every single time. That's one part of this life-giving invitation. And with every invitation that Jesus gives us, there's a challenge. There's always a challenge from Jesus. And the challenge is to verify that revelation. And Paul supplies that. He says, of these 500, some of them are not around any longer, but a lot of them are. And you can go find them, and you can ask them, and they will tell you how they saw Jesus. It was verifiable. There were reliable witnesses that numbered in the hundreds who could say, yes, we saw Jesus risen from the dead. In that 40 days between Easter and Ascension, we saw him. And then they might go on and say, and you know, it's the strangest thing. 500 of us saw them all at the same time. We weren't all together, but we saw them all at the same time. Incredible. Now, how do you and I verify it? Because we're not going to be able to find those 500 people. They're long gone from the way we can talk to them. So what do? How does that work? There is a way that you and I would verify the resurrection of Jesus through our own lives, in the way that we conduct ourselves, in the way things go. And I want to refer you, if I can find it here. Here it is. Romans chapter 6, verse 4 says this: Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father. Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father. Now, just as a short quiz, does anyone know how today the glory of the Father is displayed? I was thinking somebody in this room maybe might. I know. Everything around us? How do you mean? Creation and so forth. Yeah. That's a really excellent, excellent answer. And the creation does display his character very, very deeply. and his power very deeply. And so there's real overlap with the resurrection. And I know you're referring to Romans chapter 1, verses 19 and 20, because we talked about that at the last Theology on Tap. Yeah, right. Very good. Excellent. There we were drinking beers, and you still remember this. This is great. I'd invite you to the head of the class, but you're already sitting in the front. Okay. So, but that's excellent, Richard. Absolutely. There's an overlap with the power. What that particular verse does not mention is the glory of the Father, how the Father is glorified. Okay, I'll tell you. By this my Father is glorified, Jesus says, that you bear much fruit. That you bear much fruit. Abide in me, and you will bear much fruit. By this my Father is glorified, that you bear much fruit. Christ was raised from the dead by the glory of the Father. The way you and I witness to the resurrection today is by bearing fruit. Now, I want to suggest, as gently as I can, because I don't want to sound overly focused, black and white, it's this way and not that. I don't want to sound that way, which I know I often do, but hey, you ask me questions and you pull me back, you know, which is great. I want to suggest this, that the focus on having a good program does not guarantee that you will be abiding in Jesus and may not result in bearing fruit. To focus on abiding in Jesus will result in bearing fruit, and then events, groups, programs, whatever it is, will flow out of that. I hope that was okay. Okay. Richard is asking, am I saying the program is the fruit? If you start with abiding in Jesus and a program comes out of that, that would be part of the fruit. Absolutely. Good, very good question. Yeah. The fruit can also be your relationship with other people, new disciples. It can be something in which a person who is already a Christian begins receiving something from you. You're almost mentoring them. And they, because you were abiding in Jesus and you get something, it kind of spills into that person. That's fruit also. Yeah. If it comes from abiding in Jesus, you are connected to the power that raised him from the dead. And that's where the glory of the Father comes from. Okay? Everybody okay? All right, good. Good. Now let me just draw one or two applications for us, and then we'll come to the Lord's table today. What the Lord continually invites us to is a lifestyle, if you will, of discipleship, which always has its root of abiding in him. He even uses that picture in John 15 of a vine. I am the vine, you are the branches. And when you're integrated, spliced in with him, you are abiding, and that's where the fruit comes from. So it's the manner in which you are abiding in Jesus. And There are general ways to do that, which we're looking at in our five-year plan and so forth. And then as you're able to grab hold of that and do it specifically for yourself, innovate on your own what Jesus is giving you generally, you will be abiding in him and bearing fruit, and that will be a witness to the resurrection. When we do that together, whether it's a missional community, some other kind of group that's together for a project, and that entire group is abiding in Jesus in certain rhythms that help you do that together, then what happens is the life of Jesus starts flowing through that set of relationships, and fruit is born that gives glory to the Father and is the witness today to the resurrection. That's how that works. So the challenge for you, and what I'm really asking for you, is your commitment to this. I'm asking you today to make a commitment to three things. One is that individually, you will do all that it takes to abide in Jesus. Whatever that takes for you to do it. Whatever rhythm of prayer, worship, fellowship, outreach it takes for you personally to do that, that you would commit yourself to that. And that will be a time of challenge, of death and resurrection that doesn't stop. If you would also, pardon me, commit yourself to asking for that kind of revelation of Jesus, the revelation of the resurrected Jesus, to be given to groups that you know. If you would commit today to asking Jesus to do that entire groups of people, in whatever way God desires, would receive the revelation of Jesus, the revelation of the resurrected Jesus. That's where missional communities will come from. Groups that are part of the answer to that prayer. Groups whose heart together is given over to those that Jesus is revealing himself to. Programs come out of that. So individually, and then that whole groups outside of the church would receive that. And then if you would finally commit yourself to walking that out with other people. Individually, and you abide in Jesus. Individually, you ask for the power of the resurrection to be shown. And then you find a way to weave together with other people, that you commit yourself to doing it with others. Because the most powerful witness of the resurrection, the most powerful way of showing how fruit is born, is a group that is walking that out together. That is the clearest possible explanation of the gospel. A group that learns how to flow together, how to forgive, how to relate to one another, how to see each other's gifts and draw them out, all kinds of things like that, how to worship together. That's crucifying stuff. But you know what comes after that? The burial, then the resurrection. So if you would commit yourself to those three things today, as you come up to the table this morning, what you'll find is that to do those three things, you must stand on the power of Jesus. There is no way in our own power to do that by ourselves. See, if I think about doing it by myself, I spend my life asking myself this one question all the time. How am I going to do that? I think of one thing Jesus wants. Well, how am I going to do that? Think of the next thing. Well, how am I going to do that? I look at what it means to be a disciple. How am I going to do that? I stand on his power to do those three things and anything else he asks me. That's what it would take. All right. Thanks for this interaction this morning. Thanks for the questions. The way you looked at me when I said these things, thanks. This is great.